You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder, where every day is casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Friday, September 19th, 2014. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the three-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, it's Casual Friday. Cliff Schechter, to wrap up this week in an enormous amount of news. Also on the program, a recorded phone message from Eugene Merman telling me that he actually can't make it today at 12:45. So he will be rescheduled. And we'll also not get the plug for the Eugene Merman Comedy Festival happening over the next 3 or 4 days in Brooklyn. But there it is. I just gave it. On the program today, Scotland votes no in a much wider margin than was predicted. Also, Kansas Supreme Court, that Democratic candidate in Kansas who pulled out of the race despite the desires of the Republican Secretary of State, will no longer be on the ballot. That means Pat Roberts may have a tough time winning re-election. And Congress back from their recess over August and part of September, and they left again. Bye-bye. Until after the election. Meanwhile, Senate votes to fund some Syrian rebels. I'm not sure exactly which one. They probably don't know. The good ones. A couple of interesting votes there, particularly, when we're 5 weeks, 6 weeks out now from the midterm elections and more data on how our climate's getting warmer. I mean, just following up on that, on the interview I did with Hayes yesterday, you know, I was commiserating about, you know, how do you report on this? Okay, August, the hottest month ever. So wasn't May. Well, now it turns out the hottest summer ever around the world. And yet. So all that and more on today's program. Oh, Clive and Bundy being sued. And his defense is that the state should have taken more care to make sure that his cows didn't run into the highway as he was grazing on land that was not his and he was not allowed to be there. All that and more today. Folks, a reminder, we keep seeing some reports that there's some what I perceive to be anemic rebound in our economy. Not the case with a lot of our listeners. So we've had to, and we never turn anyone away for financial reasons, but we've lost a couple of members. So if you have the financial wherewithal, to become a member and support the show, be it the free half of the show or you want to get the second half of the show, please become a member today. Go to jointhemajorityreport.com, jointhemajorityreport.com, or, of course, just go to majority.fm. Sign up to become a member. Pennies a day. We rely on your memberships for virtually all of our revenue at this point. And so, please, if you have the opportunity to do so, please do so. And, of course, justcoffee.coop. Fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. It's a co-op, so it's employee-owned. They pay fair wages to everybody involved in the supply chain. A total win. Great coffee. The Majority Report blend is a dark but mild medium blend. Pick that up. It's delicious. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Cliff Schechter. All right, we are back, ladies and gentlemen. It is Casual Friday, and you know what that means. That means I'm going to say, you know what that means. And then I'm going to say, before we get to what you know what I mean by that, you know that I'm going to say, and you know what that means. And that means this.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC. New media, public relations, and strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC.com.
Cliff Schechter, how are you?
I am doing well. How are you doing, Sammy?
I'm doing great. A crazy week of news. I don't even think in this program that we got into the whole Adrian Peterson thing. I think we touched on it. But what we didn't even talk about this week, and you and I hadn't even mentioned it, but it just occurred to me, is that apparently it has created this massive sort of conversation in the country about corporal punishment and spanking.
Yeah.
And there's all sorts of sort of regional nuances, racial nuances, and class nuances that apparently have been part of this conversation. I don't spank my kids. I don't I don't hit them. I shove them around a little bit, but
maybe hang them out the window a little bit if they're being annoying.
It's, I mean, yeah, I just I do that line from Commando. Do you remember Smitty? You know, as he was hanging on to the thing, and I told you'd be the last to die. No, of course I don't.
I lied. Yeah, that kind of thing. That was a good line, too.
Yes.
Although I like that guy a little bit better in Warriors. But that's a whole other conversation.
Now, are you a spanker? Are you a spanker?
Am I?
Yeah.
No. I'm a big believer in that if we teach people violence, that violence is the answer, whether it's sending people off to war immediately before trying to work things out, telling people to stand their ground, you know, or all the way down to hitting your kids. It's sending that message that you know, we can't use the brains that we theoretically were born with and solve our problems any other way besides violence. So, I try my best. You know, I think I've grabbed my kids once or twice in frustration and then let go, you know, and I fought that impulse to ever, you know, to do anything violent. And as you know, kids can drive you to that point.
Oh my God. In all honesty, I remember when, you know, I don't know what it is. Saul's just an easier kid, I guess. Or maybe after the first kid, something inside of you, you know, your life has already been crushed. So your expectations are less about what.
Your spirits.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. But, I distinctly remember like, with Myla, who was not a sleeper at all and would just wail, like, I could really imagine how shaking baby syndrome happens. I mean,
right.
And
you can, because then you even imagine in certain circumstances there aren't parents that mean harm by it, but you just sort of pick a baby for a second, shake him or her for a second, just like, please stop.
Right.
But you know, you have to realize, of course, what that can do ahead of time and not do it, because babies are so obviously fragile even to a slight shake. And, you know, and it goes that way for spanking, too. And then but again, I think that's a conversation we should have as a country about what we're comfortable with and what we're not. I know there's certain cultural differences, but, you know, there's certain cultural differences and religious differences in the way women are treated, and it doesn't mean we respect that religion or culture over women's rights in this country. So, but you still have to take it and understand the difference between, yeah, there's some people out there who spank their children on their bottom in a way, and that's certainly not comparable to what Adrian Peterson did in any way, shape, or form.
Right.
When you're picking
up
a wooden branch and smacking the hide of your child. A four-year-old, yes, where there are lacerations on his body, including his testicles. That's something that, you know, I'm sorry. I mean, that to me, that you should be in prison. Frankly.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, it's interesting because I was spanked. I mean, I just watched this clip of Sean Hannity. We're getting way off topic here, but I saw this clip of Sean Hannity.
It's an important topic, though, so I'm glad we're covering
where
it.
I
don't think we've talked about it.
Sean Hannity was talking to a panel, and he kept saying, like, you know, I was hit with a belt. Now, I got hit with a belt as a kid, and I forcibly had my mouth washed out with soap more than once as a kid. And
in your parents' defense, you probably deserved it.
Well, you know,
I'm having fun with you.
But it's funny because that's what Hannity kept saying. He's like, I deserved it. And, you know, that to me sounds like a guy who's just trying to sort of justify why his parents effed up. And, you know.
You have to remember, though, that's Sean Hannity. I mean, you're trying to think this out and say, you know, did my parents go too far? Is that an appropriate way? Like, I was spanked.
There's
too,
no, I have belt, no hesitation in saying, like, I don't know. I imagine I was a very obnoxious kid, but I wasn't, you know, I wasn't lighting the house on fire or anything. But I will say this, that, like, it was wholly inappropriate. I knew it was inappropriate at the time. And, you know, when I got big enough, essentially, I remember the last time I got hit, and it was basically I got hit and I just stood there and I just looked at my dad. I said, you know, now you may have some problems. And
then I'm going to hold your ass down and start spanking you, pal.
I mean, honestly, but, you know, and I grew up, you know, determined not to do that to my kids. Now, with that said, like, I do remember one time when Milo was probably around four, where we were having a big fight about brushing her teeth, and she was getting physical with me. And I just sat down, I put her on my lap, and I held her in my arms, and I said, guess what? We're not moving here until you brush your teeth. And about an hour and 15 minutes later, because I just wanted to basically show her, and it occurred to me at that point, too, like, it's much easier as a parent if you do not have, if you don't have somewhere to go. Because at one point, you will be able to just simply outlast the kid. And we just sat there, and I think there were times that she struggled, and I didn't squeeze, but I also didn't, like, she was locked in there, and we were just sitting there, and, after an hour and 15 minutes, she brushed her teeth. I never had a problem again. Because,
there you go.
It wasn't the physical part.
That's not even comparable to spanking.
Right.
But I've done that a number of times where I've restrained my kids, not held them hard or whatever, but wrapped my arms around them. Remember, I've got two boys too, and you'll see what that's like soon enough, Sam. And when they're flailing and want to fight and whatever, you've got to put your arms around them. And I've done that. I don't consider that any kind of, that's to prevent them from hurting themselves, frankly.
Right.
Or someone else. Yeah, I don't know. That's a different story. I'm just saying, I still think society, not everything's black and white. In Sean Hannity's world, everything is, because everything's about, what his talking points are. So watching him on something like that's useless. But for those of us who have brains and are trying to think these things out, I think you can find a place where you say, well, maybe it's okay for some parents to spank. That may not be how I want to handle it. But it's a much different thing with an open hand on somebody's bottom than to pick up a belt or a fucking, tree branch. I mean, my God. Because this is a four-year-old boy. I have a four-year-old boy.
Yeah,
that's standing there while my kid is bawling and crying and, with how much I love my son, the thought of looking at that and continually hitting him, I don't understand how Adrian Peterson's a human being, frankly, that frightens me that somebody could do that. It really does.
That to me just seems like a total, it's just almost unimaginable. The kid is so small, the data shows it's a little bit less clear with sort of like controlled spanking. Although I don't think when most people spank that they're like, okay, come on over here, blah, blah, blah. And it's controlled. But the data is quite clear that type of violence doesn't work, even in the short run. I mean, maybe it works for 10 minutes, but it doesn't work much longer than that. And, if you believe that is an appropriate way for a four-year-old, for God's sakes, it seems to me that really what you should be doing is going out and just getting some type of like cattle prod or like ankle bracelet and just giving him a shock, because at that point, like, you just perceive this kid as an animal, and we don't even allow people to do this to animals.
So no, I don't understand. I know.
Like, we would never allow a dog or a puppy to be whipped.
If somebody walks
with
by
a
and
stick,
you're hitting a puppy with a branch,
they take the dog away.
Cruelty. The thing is also here, and this is important too, I always sort of look at the broader themes here. We've known this for a while about the NFL. I mean, if you took any basic psychology, you probably learned about some of the more aggressive men who have the extra Y chromosome and how much more prevalent that is among certain athletes, professional football players, hockey players, who are more prone to violence. Talk show hosts, definitely people who host radio shows, let's say between the hours of 11 and 1.
Right.
I think when you realize how bad it is, and how much they're covering it up, and that the Ray Rice thing was clearly going to only be the tip of the iceberg, and since Adrian Peterson, we've now had two more NFL players charged with spousal abuse. One for headbutting his wife because she didn't want to have sex with him. I can't think of what his name is. And so now that the press are starting to pay attention to these things, they're just going to have to redo everything in the NFL. I mean, this is not something, even if you want to cover it up, even if you're as much of a bastard as Goodell seems to be, you can't, because these guys have never been taught that this behavior is unacceptable. They just haven't. It's been covered up their whole lives because they were stars, in grade school, high school, college, if they went, they literally may need all sorts of classes and who knows what to teach some of these guys how they behave around women. And I'm not making excuses for them, because I think you should instinctually have some ideas on that one. But I think some of these guys grew up in homes where this was acceptable behavior. As you said, there are cultural differences. A lot of people were who knows how Adrian Peterson was punished by his parents. My guess is he was hit with all sorts of objects.
Right.
If he thought that was acceptable behavior. So I think you know, the NFL is going to have to do something, and they're going to have to invest major money in it, and they're going to have to do it right, or you're going to see this stuff all the time, because the press is now going to pay attention.
All right. Well, so let's move to Scotland, or I should say, let's move to the topic of Scotland. Although
Scotland. You
know, we spoke to John Nichols from I think he was in Glasgow, and it sounded like it was a lot of fun. And you know, the first thing,
any excuse for a party with drinking in Scotland, they'll find it.
I got to tell you,
respect about them, by the way.
When we were talking to him. And he was talking about the incredible energy on the streets in terms of the yes vote. The only thing that kept resonating in my head and was when I was up in New Hampshire in 2008 for the Republican primary. And if you based your predictions on the excitement on the street in Manchester, New Hampshire, now, I will say this, there wasn't a lot of excitement on the streets of Manchester, New Hampshire, but to the extent that there was any obvious support for somebody, it would have been Ron Paul. And I think he came in last in New Hampshire.
This is in 2008 or 2012?
2008,
okay.
And I think, you know, and I think it's indicative of who his supporters were. They were young people. They were people who felt like they didn't have access to the established chain of publicity and promotion. And I think to a certain extent, that's basically what we saw in Scotland. I mean, the yes vote won, or I should say lost. No vote won 55-45, more or less.
Right.
And the numbers on the breakdown of youth was stunning.
Younger people, I'm sure, were what much more in favor of breaking away?
16 and 17-year-olds, the yes vote was 71%, no was 29%. Voters
right.
Age over 65, it was almost the absolute reverse, 27%.
Well, isn't
yes.
That, I mean, go ahead, sorry.
No, well, I mean, that I guess that's to be expected, but that's pretty
sure.
Dramatic.
It's dramatic. I would say it's completely expected. I mean, if you look at it, and I predicted before that it would lose, because here's the thing. It was up 51-49 that last poll. And when I was thinking back to what happened in Quebec when they had their breakaway vote, when was it again? Probably in the 90s. It was a while back. And when I was thinking about some of the early gay marriage votes, the thing is that people are, and this gets much more pronounced as we know as you get older, see Republican Party, old white men, people get more and more scared of change. And I think when they get into that polling booth to vote, some people that initially thought they would do it just can't bring themselves to do it. It's the devil they know versus the one they don't.
Right.
And so the thing is that I really think when I saw it was only 51-49 in favor in that last poll, I was sure it was going to lose. Because it seems like to me on every one of these types of situations, you know, five, something like that, 7-8 points drop off in the end. So you really have to go in, I think, with close to 60% to feel confident that you're going to win. And you know, I mean, but again, that tells you the story, the demographic breakdowns you just did. It's sort of like in this country, what tells you the story of where we're headed because of the demographics. You know, there's an older group of people. They're set. They know where they're, you know, especially those who are older and still working. They know their financial situation. If Scotland breaks away from England, who knows? Scotland is suddenly. I'm not saying they shouldn't necessarily do this. I'm not taking a position either way. I'm just saying they may be in a more precarious situation financially, and that bigger countries can take more advantage of them. They don't have the negotiating power.
They don't have control over their. They're a small country that doesn't have control over their currency. That's a big problem.
Exactly. They lose some of their some natural resources. I mean, they're just, you know, when you become a smaller country that doesn't have the relationships that London has with, you know, going back centuries with countries, not always good, of course, but built over centuries, let's say, with some of the countries, bigger economies in Europe, Germany having the biggest economy, France having a big economy, and others. It does. You know, they're going to be to a certain degree smelling blood and knowing that they can go and sort of threaten you because you're a smaller economy now and you don't have, you also don't have the military wherewithal to protect yourself in the way you would if you were with. So,
I don't even know the answers to those questions, whether they would have been better off or not, frankly. I just don't know the issues enough. But at the end of the day, nobody really knew. And so it was really just a question of, are you gonna take that leap? And I think at the end of the day, they decided they didn't.
And they've made say the last thing quite clearly again, just like, well, are we gonna take that leap when it comes to women's rights, or are we gonna take that leap when it comes to gay rights, or some of the things that differ so much demographically? We are when the people, the youngest generations right now are older and ones that don't remember. Aren't sort of plagued by some of the memories that older Americans are. And it's the same thing there, clearly. You know, I mean, well, clearly, unless something big changes when these youngest sort of cohorts get older, Scotland will be its own country, you know, and they'll figure it out when the time comes.
All right, well, let's turn from that. I want to talk a little bit about what happened this week in terms of Ebola, because, a couple weeks ago you were like, we really got to pay attention to this. And the World Health Organization, according to their latest figures, and some people say these actually could be pretty conservative because a lot of the cases maybe aren't necessarily reported in the proper way, but there have been about 5,335 cases of Ebola, about 2,622 deaths. So that's basically half the people who have contracted it. It has been doubling every 3 weeks, these figures.
Right.
And this week, the U.S. government and, you know, when we talk about U.S. intervention, this is the kind of intervention I like to see, frankly. We're sending 3,000 troops. We're sending hospital beds. We're sending something like, 400,000 kits on how to deal with Ebola. In these places, they need it. In Liberia, they need like 1,200 beds. They only have 240. And this is a situation, this is very problematic because, if you don't have a place to put these people, it just continues to, they pass on the virus.
Right. Well, yeah, and, you know, to be clear, when I said that to you a couple of weeks ago that I wanted to talk about this, it was for what I saw, a couple of important reasons at the time. It seemed to me this issue was only being covered in two ways, which was ignored by most people, and then the conspiracy mongers and people who like getting headlines or whatever, like, oh, my God, the whole world's going to die. And I thought talking about this in a rational way and saying, look, there is, you know, and not freaking out, but saying, hey, this is serious and there is a problem here. And there are people, scientists saying, you know, when we see a guy who gets on an airplane and ends up dying in the airport in Nigeria, who is from Minnesota, you know, that clearly this thing can travel now. It used to be rural, you know, based in rural areas. Then it hadn't even hit Eastern Africa before, or it had been 30 or 40 years. And suddenly this thing was in cities and travel, and everything you're saying is right now. And, you know, look, right now, Sierra Leone has just begun a 3-day lockdown where everybody's ordered into their homes. In Guinea, you know, they just, there was a mob that attacked eight yep. Americans, I think, Westerners certainly, and killed them. A group of journalists, a priest, I believe, and some aid workers because people are freaking out. And then the conspiracy theories start, they're purposely trying to kill us. And you know, that's why you want to get on these things, and my condolences immediately to the families of the people who are very courageous in being over there. But that's why you want to try to get on these things as soon as possible, you know? And I mean, and there were broader issues too. I mean, one of them is that the healthcare infrastructure of the United States, you know, if we're talking about it in a purely selfish way, has been ignored to the point of where we would be in much worse shape. We've allowed people who are the poorest of the poor in this country to be in much worse physical shape than let's say in most Western European countries. And that's how this thing ends up killing people. And then it spreads. And that was an important conversation to have, our lack of spending on infrastructure and prevention and treatment. And the fact that, you know, there was no money really in a cure for this thing because people who are getting it are poor and they're, and you know, they're, the gestation period is such that people are dying very quickly, and you'd need a lot more people to get it and be in to hit wealthy countries before pharmaceutical companies would say, hey, there's some money in this. This is where you need government to step in, where there isn't that market incentive that nobody on the right since Reagan seems to understand. So these are all important. And, you know, and I'll add one last thing to that I don't think I thought about last time, which is, you know, the United States could use a little good will around the world.
Right.
We're always ready to go in and bomb when it's ISIS. But these are the kinds of things that build up trust and friendship when you use softer power, if you want to call that, when you use diplomacy, when you use aid, when you use humanity to go in and help people before the kinds of situations develop that could develop, especially when a disease like this is breaking out and mass panic can break out.
And
so
nothing,
for all those reasons.
To add to that list of things, you know, the U.S. drafted a resolution that was adopted at the Security Council just, I think it was yesterday. It establishes a United Nations mission for Ebola emergency response. It is basically going to build and maintain a platform in that region and some mechanism essentially to be operational in responding to this crisis. And that's, you know, good for the United States. You know, it's not like there's been this huge domestic outcry, but it's good that we're doing stuff like that. And for all the reasons that you mentioned, not the least of which, it's a humane thing to do. And so, you know, people should just keep in mind when we talk about U.S. intervention around the world, this is a component of it. It's probably the best component of it in some respects, but
definitely.
All right. Well, let's turn. Unless you got anything else on that, I want to turn to what's happening with Congress. And you know, there was a vote in the Senate last night, or I guess yesterday afternoon, to approve. They rolled it in with the continuing resolution. So if you voted against this, you voted to defund the government. But some people were able to make that vote, and I think they were basically released by Harry Reid to vote against it. It's one of those just sort of like cowardly, like, really? You're really going to roll it into this? But they did it. And it was an interesting the vote was, well, aside from being somewhat, depressing, insofar as, yes, we are now funding, I don't know who, the good guys, supposedly.
Remember, we're only funding the moderates.
Right.
Who are going to, in a magical Iron Man-like way, take on both the Assad regime, they're radical, but they're also sort of authoritarian Shiites, as well as the radical, crazy, far, far right religious group of ISIS. And this magical group we're going to fund, whoever they are, and provide arms to, I'm sure will effectively be able to do that while not having anyone hand over arms to people that they will use against us eventually. And it will all work out well.
Yeah. Now, this is bound to work. I mean, it's really, I don't know. It's just so, I don't know, pathetic. But it was interesting as to who the nays were. There were 22 nays. They were, more or less split in terms of Democrats and Republicans. Guy like Begich voted against it.
Some of the Western Democrats are more libertarian-esque states. Tester voted against it.
Sherrod Brown voted against it. You've got Cruz and Rand Paul, of course, voting against it. Pat Roberts in his race voted against it. Bernie Sanders voted against it. Elizabeth Warren voted against it, which is not something that I would have guessed, frankly. But I guess, you know, both Massachusetts senators voted against it. Chris Murphy voted against it. Gillibrand voted
basically
against
it. Was a combination of sort of paleo conservatives, progressives, and sort of libertarian, those from libertarian leaning states, it seems, were the ones who kind of joined And on these kinds of things, that's often a coalition where you find yourself voting like in the same way as a Louis Gohmert, and you almost feel like you've now lost all ability to speak intelligently about anything. But even your Ted Cruz's and Louis Gohmert's can, for the wrong reasons, be right about something here and there. So.
Right. And so this vote passes. It is just, you know, there's no vote really authorizing any type of expanded airstrikes. Congress, both the House, the House basically packed up and left Washington yesterday. The Senate is about to do the same thing, I think, in the next couple of days. And no one, you know, I haven't read anything. And this was sort of shocking to me. The president sent notice on August 8th to the Congress under the War Powers Act saying that I am involved, beginning to, you know, provide air support for the Iraqis. And this is when he was when we were bombing to protect to support the protection of Erbil, the Yazidis on that mountaintop and around the Mosul Dam. And supposedly 90 days, right? He's supposed to come. Excuse me, 60 days. He's supposed to be back at the Senate in the House on October 7th. Nobody's going to be there.
Oops. You know, and I mean, still we're arguing in terms of, you know, this is sort of funding this thing, right? So still we're arguing, if I understand this correctly, for the ability to do this under the authorization to use military force.
Well, he's claiming that. The president's claiming that for the bombing. I mean, in terms of arming the Syrian rebels, we just got authorization to do it. That's it. I mean,
no, that's what we just voted on. Right. What I'm saying is, though, you know, our engagement there militarily is we're basing on that. And of course, you know, that's what Bush based his invasion of Iraq on, and that was plainly illegal to begin with because the AUMF, what it spoke to was anybody who either was connected in a part of 9/11 or harbored those. Well, that was not Iraq, clearly. So we made that mistake once, and now we're using that as a justification to go in here when there's, again, ISIS may be terrible, terrible people, and they clearly are, but I understand I'm not going to take anybody seriously on the right who's just using this to score points, but people that are sort of objective observers or those in the left who point this out, I mean, how can you use that to justify what we're doing?
Right.
And the worry is the precedent you keep setting for future presidents.
Exactly. Well, so they took that vote. Congress left town. I think this is the ultimate sort of four corners, right, strategy by the Republicans. They feel, were it not for the Kansas State Supreme Court ruling that Chad Taylor, the Democrat in that three-way race, could actually not run for Senate, despite the ruling by the Republican Secretary of State. We'll touch on that in a second. But that that breaking news bumped me from a segment on Hayes where we were going to be talking about new polling, which shows that women, particularly married women, sort of like the soccer moms who are now sort of the security moms, have a heightened fear of terrorism, and it has changed their sort of generic balloting from the Democrats to the Republicans. I don't think it's going to have much of an impact, frankly, one way or another. But it's
That was one poll, though, Sam. I mean, are we sure this isn't just random noise?
Listen, even if it's not random noise, I'm not convinced that those were relevant votes anyways. I mean, the votes that I think Democratic candidates are looking for are single women and not necessarily people who are convinced that because of those two videos or three videos put out by ISIS that we now have a major terrorist threat. And so I think that was overstated, but certainly it seems like the Republicans, who in the House offered a lot more support to this plan than the Democrats did, this seems to be their issue that they want to try and nationalize these elections, right? That's the dynamic that's going on here. The Republicans try and nationalize it by either 8 months ago, they thought it was going to be Obamacare. Then all of a sudden, that sort of fell apart. Then they were talking just about Obama, but, you know, that's a very tricky thing to
Benghazi,
do.
Benghazi, you know, imperial overreach, Obama, blah, blah, blah. That didn't work either. No, I think you're right. I mean, they've got memories of 2002 and 2004.
Right.
You know, and how the issue of terrorism helped them, and they're thinking the same thing is going through. And, you know, how that will work, I don't know. I could still see some people being gullible enough to fall for it in certain races. But I think, you know, and clearly, obviously, you can't speak fully to this unless if there is some sort of a terrorist attack somewhere, something high profile, that may change dynamics further. So I think you just have to sort of keep all of that in mind. But right now, the difference is they're not the ones with the president in office. The Democrats are. And, you know, in the end, the Republicans in there voted to support what President Obama did. I mean, they were, as you point out, his biggest support. So I don't know if it puts them in the clean kind of position that they were put in 2002 and 2004.
I don't think it does. I mean, look, the bottom line is, and this has been the story from day one, can the Democrats, and it doesn't appear that there's going to be any national agenda for the Democrats to get people out. I mean, there's ballot initiatives on the minimum wage. That's definitely going to help. And that's been a big push by the Democrats nationally. But it's really just going to come down to these specific races. Like, nobody has an idea at all about what's happening in Alaska. Right. I mean, maybe it's worth, an email to Shannon Moore. Maybe she has a better sense of it. Living up there, but there's no polling. There's no, I mean, that thing seems to be like completely, people.
Well,
are
Alaska traditionally is tougher to poll just because of where people live. You know what I mean? It's so split up, you know, in terms of people living in far flung places. It's just not as easy a place for them to get accurate polling. It's always been kind of a problem.
This Kansas thing, it's interesting to see what will happen in Kansas. It doesn't appear that I don't know. You have a better sense of this than I do, but Kentucky doesn't look as hopeful as it did maybe a couple of months ago.
Yeah, I'm still hanging in there and thinking that Grimes has a good shot. I will admit to not being as optimistic as I was, but I'm still convincing myself she could win. And in Kansas, I would say, look, that Democrat's name coming off the ballot, pretty clearly Orman is up by a very decent amount, not even by a small amount, by like a 7 or 8 point gap. So now Kris Kobach, the cheesiest jackwad of all Secretary of States in the country, is trying in 8 days, has sort of said, you have to put another Democrat's name on there. But it's not clear the Democrats do have to do that. And some people,
you know what they should do? If they've got to put another Democrat on there, you know what they should do? They should find someone named Pat Roberts.
I agree. That's what
they should find someone named Pat Roberts and put another Pat Roberts on there.
Yep. Like, here you go, bud. Enjoy. I would do that too. That would be fantastic. But I'm not even sure they have to.
Right.
I think he's just angry and spouting off. And I go, so that changes the
or they should get Jimmy. Don't vote for me.
Yeah. There you go. But in the end, like, you know, all these in a bunch of these other states, things have been moving in a Democratic direction. You know, in North Carolina, that's been true. You know, in Colorado, that's been true. Leading some of the other polling guys. You know, now the New York Times, already the Washington Post has said now the Democrats have a slight advantage to hold. The New York Times one is down to 51% Republican chance from like 65 or 70 where they were 2 weeks ago. And Nate Silver's one is down to 55% Republican from where they were a couple weeks ago, and they had it 80% at one point Republican. So I mean, clearly things are moving against Republicans. Again, it doesn't just necessarily mean it's going to work the way we'd like it to work, but the Democrats are in a much better position by some luck and good fortune of Pat Roberts being somebody who doesn't actually live in the state he's running in and didn't really try, and a few other things going on too. So we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting. And of course, you know, when we talk about this again, you know, the biggest issue there's two. This also, you know, I meant to raise with you last week is that the Celinda Lake polling firm and did some focus testing where they basically found that a huge percentage of Democrats, particularly the Democratic base voters from 2008, are not aware of the stakes involved in this election in terms of it possibly turning the Senate over to Republicans. They don't seem to. In some instances, they don't even know that the Democrats are controlling the Senate. I mean, so there needs to be, this is really going to be about turnout, isn't it? I mean, it's really just a question of if the Democrats can mobilize in these states. And again, you know, the importance of this for me is quite clear. There are something like 155 executive administration positions, executive positions to be filled, and judgeships to be filled. You know, this is a great opportunity to get as many of those judiciary spots filled, never mind the implications, of course, for the Supreme Court. And frankly, I don't trust President Obama enough to be in a dynamic where both houses are Republican. That just scares me. I would rather just sort of punt on everything and get those judicial appointments.
Right. I mean, that's exactly right. I mean, the question is, the far right probably doesn't, once again, would sabotage any attempts for a grand bargain or thing. But if you think on a number of issues, whether it's, you know, the big what do you call it, the TPP trade deal,
uh-huh.
You know, or you think of charter schools, or you think of Social Security, there are some definite things to be concerned about with President Obama, you know, coming to some sort of a grand deal with Republicans on. And so having the break there of the Democratic Senate is kind of important.
Right. So, and here's the thing, too, is that when the president's in a position to say to Democratic senators or Democrats in the House or Democrats at large, look, I got to make a deal with the Republicans. If I want to get these, officials confirmed, if I want to get this justice confirmed, or if I want to get this legislation, passed that would be otherwise, not controversial, I got to give them, like you say, the TPP. Or I got to give them, Keystone Pipeline, et cetera, et cetera. There's a lot of things here that I'm concerned about in that regard. And at the end of the day, it doesn't matter if it's Mark Begich who's getting in there, who I'm not a huge fan of, or I don't know that I would be a huge fan of Alison London Grimes on everything either, or
Or Greg Orman from Kansas.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
For that matter. And my guess is we won't be.
Right.
But I think that holding out of the Senate is more important, you know, and B, you sometimes look at some of these states, you know, when you start looking at a place like Kansas and how long it's sent Republicans and how terrible some of them have been, particularly recently, like its current governor who was a senator in Brownback, you know. I mean, if Orman's not great on a lot of things, but is to side with the Democrats and supports immigration reform and background checks and is pro-choice, you know, I mean, it is Kansas. So you have
and
to
you got 2 years.
Account.
You got 2 years until we're going to have a much different looking Senate at the very least. So,
yes,
Cliffy, next week we will be off on Friday to celebrate the Jewish New Year, as is my general practice. And so I will give you one of these. Now, I wish I could actually really start a study.
Like if I could blast now.
Yeah. I can't do
that. Are you
rapping? I was trying to do the, the Tequila Goldola. I'm not sure. So I wish you a happy Jewish New Year right now, and we'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
You too, man. All right, take it easy. Buddy. Thanks for having me on.
All right, bye-bye. Bye. Folks, this late-breaking story right now. Kyle Schenck just hit the big 3-0, ladies and gentlemen.
Ooh.
Yes, our very own Kyle happy birthday to you. This is really should be like a, I mean, not a national holiday, but it is a, it's a show holiday, because this show would not exist but for Kyle Shank. Now, it may be the case that we would have never had Right Wing Mandela without Michael, or like a guest list without Michael. But oh, come on, don't be so sensitive. And Matt, of course, we wouldn't have the huge WWE following were it not for you. But you would not be hearing my voice right now were it not for what Kyle Shank has done in approaching me and saying, like, hey, you should do a show. I can do that. I'll set it up for you. What? Really? Okay. And he did it. So do you want me to read that on air? No. Okay.
Well, I want him to read it on air. Yeah. Read it on air.
All right. Folks, a reminder, it is a man cannot live on Kyle Shank's brilliance alone. And it is your support of this program which makes this program possible. Become a member today at majority.fm. Or you can go to jointhemajorityreport.com. If you buy crap from Amazon, buy it through our Amazon link. Just go to majorityreportkickback.com, click on the link, bookmark it. We get a kickback. You notice absolutely no difference in your Amazon shopping experience. JustCoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Get 10% off with the coupon code MAJORITY on Monday of this program next week. I think I can confirm this. We will have the American Federation of Teachers President Randy Weingarten on the show. If you have any questions you want me to ask Randy Weingarten, please, by all means, send them to me at majorityreporters@gmail.com. And, oh, I should also say the app. iOS 8, for those who use an iPhone app, apparently has screwed up the delivery of live video and streaming, not just for us, but for a lot of people. Kyle is, it's his birthday today. And so for a birthday gift for him, we gave him the task of fixing the app. But we've given him a reprieve. He's going to work on an update over the weekend. We're going to put it in. We're going to update the app. By this time next week, we should have it fixed. But for now, the iOS 8 will screw up your ability to listen to the show live. I think it's okay in terms of streaming the podcast. And remember, it is free, both the iOS app and the Android app, and you can get it at majorityapp.com. Do we have a Jimmy Reefer Cake song this weekend?
He sent us an old one, so, I mean, we already played it on the show a while ago.
Oh, all right. Well, then we will head into the funner half of the program now. Oh, wait. Oh, before we do, actually, I will – Eugene Merman was scheduled to appear on the program today, and this is why he's not here.
Hey, I'm going to lunch with my family and wanted to know if I could do the interview at noon or earlier.
Yeah. He, apparently in the new iOS 8, he thought he was voice texting me, didn't realize he was recording audio. So he's not here today, but the Eugene Merman Comedy Festival is going on this weekend. It's a pretty good show. I had some questions asking because it used to be sort of an anti-comedy festival where it was really just mocking comedy festivals. Now it seems like it's a comedy festival. So if you're in the BK, check it out. I'm getting reports that the podcast didn't work either on iOS 8. So
don't upgrade. Yeah. Don't do it.
Don't do it yet. but we will have it fixed within a week. Apologies. All right, folks. So long, suckers. It is not a freebie Friday. We're going to head into the funner half, and it's going to be fun. 646-257-3920 is the number. The IM. Oh, maybe we'll get that libertarian fellow.
Yeah, I was about to say, we had a fantastic libertarian caller yesterday on the members.
We went really long yesterday. Yeah. And
for members.
Yeah, when the members got almost an extra hour of... Oh, I think they did.
Yeah.
Of content yesterday. And the reason is because at the end, we had a libertarian caller who felt that Walter Block did not do a good job. And he was going to do a good job.
Even though he couldn't hear you very well because he was on the libertarian phone line.
Well, we do have a special libertarian phone line where the phone never works. But maybe he'll call back, but we shall see. 646-257-3920 is the number if you want to be a part of the program. If you're another libertarian and you feel that not only could you do better in representing libertarianism, then Professor Walter Block did, or I cannot remember his name from yesterday, did, please, by all means, call in. Willing to discuss any topic you want to discuss. You can explain to me why libertarianism is something other than just sort of like a cultish pseudo-religion based on faith and some amorphous set of ideals that we can't really explain. And that really don't seem to have any consistency based upon the conversation I had with the guy yesterday. 646-257-3920. If you have not upgraded your phone to iOS 8, you can, or you're on an Android, you can IM me at on the app. Like I said, you can get a majority app, or you can IM me at AOL Instant Message. All right, see you soon.